and welcome to another episode of the Snowies Camping Show with Ben and Lauren.
Me and you.
Me and you. Wherever you're listening to your podcast, don't forget to subscribe and also head over to our Facebook group, The Snowies Camping Banter, if you want to join in on any of the conversation that's happening there, which is often quite fun. So if you are, this is our second episode for season four. If you've missed the last one, we did a Q&A session shout out at the beginning of the year because we hadn't done one for a really long time. And the response to that got like 108 comments or something
unbelievable
as of this morning. Yeah. Or yes, because we're recording our last episode and this episode back to back, which is why Ben and I look exactly the same. If you're someone who's watching on YouTube. Anyway, the result of
that. I look like this every time.
Yeah, you do actually. But the result of that Q&A session, that Q&A question, which usually we would get enough sort of feedback from a shout out like that to cover one episode. I think in the past, maybe you've had a part two episode, but this time we've got enough to cover us with three episodes. So we are recording these and we will be publishing them in order, I think.
We'll see, maybe not.
Maybe not.
So this may or may not be. So session two depends on if we get another cool topic that we go, yeah, let's talk about that in between.
Yes. So, episode, not sure what episode it is, but this is session two of the Q&A. And
there's some familiar names in this list too.
There
some are regulars in the Facebook group and the YouTube channel.
So the first question we've got here from Curtis on Facebook is, what cooking options do you recommend for total fire bans when camping? 12-volt devices, solar ovens, or eat everything cold?
Well, so first thing I'd say is check in on an old episode that we've got with the CFS to make sure you understand just what it means by fire ban, because in some instances, in some places, you can use a gas stove, some you can't. So you need to be really clear on just what fire ban means in the region you're camping in. But
yeah,
let's assume you can't use an open flame.
Yeah, I think total fire ban days for us in South Australia, like fire ban season is one thing. You can actually still have a campfire in fire ban season.
Yep.
But total fire ban days, it's like no, nothing.
Yep. No naked flame at all. So let's assume we can't use a naked flame at all.
I would initially, personally, go for mostly eat everything cold because if it's a total fire ban day, it's going to be bloody hot. And you're probably not going to want to be having anything hot.
Probably not. Well, you could in that instance do what the our video guy, Larry, does when we go out for filming days and he just heats his prawn noodle thing up in the sunscreen of the car.
Yeah, he puts it on the dash of his car.
He doesn't get sick though, so it smells really good what he cooks.
Well, I don't know about you, but have you ever
recommend that, by the way.
Yeah, please don't food poison yourself. Yeah. Of course you have, but you know when you get into the car and you haven't had your dash mat or not dash mat, window thing up or whatever and it's been bloody hot, you literally cannot even touch your steering wheel.
It's 50 or 60 degrees,
it would be more than that, I reckon, in some cases. Yeah. Like it would be so gosh darn hot.
Well, I think 60 degrees is the safe zone for food. So
yeah, so I think you know, middle of summer on your dash, you're exceeding that. So Bob's your uncle, but again, we're not professionals, so
don't just pretend you didn't say that.
Yeah, but I think like there's, you know, a bit of milk and cereal and a Sanger or a wrap or you know like a big salad. If you take things like a cooked chook or something and you have some cold meat in your fridge and it's not, you know, it's not overly bad to eat everything cold.
Go cold. Yeah. This goes back to, I think the first question in the last episode was around induction cookers as well using 12-volt appliances. So there are, but by 12-volt, there's not really many 12-volt cooking appliances. You can use a 12-volt stove or an oven, but you need to be, we won't go into detail there. Have a look at the, have a listen to the first question in the last episode where we talked about setting yourself up for running like a 240-volt induction cooktop.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got 240-volt power, that's good. But you can also travel buddy.
Yeah, travel buddy 12-volt ovens.
And some other 12-volt ovens.
Which you can heat stuff up in. You can, but again, you need to make sure that your battery system is capable of delivering what's required for those because they do have a draw of around 10 amps and you might need to be running that for an hour to 2 hours, which, you know, I think also being a resistive element. That's what it's requiring. It's not like induction uses magnetics and they jiggle around and all that sort of jazz. Your travel buddy ovens and your 12 volt ovens have a resistive element. So being a resistive load, there doesn't, you do need to make sure that your battery and it's wired properly and everything is capable of delivering delivering what that oven needs to be used efficiently. There are a lot of people who contact us and be like, I can't get my oven more than 150. And it's just because they're not, their batteries just can't hack it or their wiring is not hacking it. So there are some options for that because you can do things like, for example, I know people who do like a lasagna, right? And they do it in those little disposable foil tray things, chuck it in the freezer, take it away camping, put it in their little oven. And obviously, you know, you're not going to be using as much if you're defrosting that. You get it out the day before, fully defrosts, chuck it in your oven.
Yep. I reckon best things go cold because we're talking about battery power, but if you're using a fridge on a hot day like that, then you're already drawing a heap of power from your battery anyway. Go cold on a really hot fire ban day. If you have to have something hot, then induction or 12 volt appliances, there are some out there, but they're not nearly as efficient.
And bear in mind, you know, for anybody else listening, Curtis has specifically said total fire ban days, which is different to fire ban season. And as I've said before, there are options for you, even within fire ban season, to have flame for cooking. So if we're talking about total fire ban days, it's not like that's going to be, you know, like in my experience, a total fire ban day, you might get one or two days that are a total fire ban. Or, you know, if we're talking like total fire ban for more than a couple of days, I don't necessarily know if I'd want to be out camping in weather like that anyway.
Probably especially want to be getting somewhere
especially
safe.
Somewhere like off, I'm talking off-grid camping.
Because you get, you're talking bushfire risk and that sort of thing anyway.
Correct.
So if it's looking like a long hot spell like that, then I'd probably be heading somewhere away from too much bushland.
Correct.
Second question, Darren, is this, you know, this is
old mate Darren,
we're only using first names here, but Darren asked a question on the last episode.
Well, he asked quite a few questions, so I've just spread them out.
Lots of input in the group. Thanks again, Darren. What advancements have you seen in the industry? Example, swag poles went from fiberglass to aluminium to composite flexible poles. Now, there's still all three of those used just for reference. And each company will talk about the benefits of each.
Good to know that
we won't go into the differences on those now. Yeah. But Darren's asking about broad advancements in
Main ones that stand out are ultralight materials, things like Dyneema. And that's super ultralight, like nylon ripstop and things like that. Like when I was a kid, that stuff just didn't exist. Air poles in air tents.
Good one. Absolutely.
Because even when I was a kid, I remember the first time that we got a dome tent and they were like, whoa, dome tent.
Flexi poles.
Like this is amazing. It's
no more steel like jigsaw to put a frame together. Yeah. There were these flexi poles and they're all joined together by shock cord.
Yeah, and it was just so cool. And now it's sort of like dome tent.
Yeah.
Which I'm sad about because dome tents rock. But anyway, and so now we've sort of got air poles and there's a lot of wow in terms of what is being done with air poles.
I think there's always and always will be ongoing advancements in solar and 12 volt technology and the appliances that can be run on that. And that's a bit like PCs and phones. It's where it is now. You've got, if you buy now, you've got the latest best performing equipment as of now, but there's already better performing equipment being
12
developed.
12 months later.
It's just not on the shelf yet.
And so, I mean, if you think about even just batteries, like AGM batteries are heavy and big, but compared to what they would have been, you know, 10, 20 years ago, they're a lot smaller and lighter, or solar panels getting more efficient with how the cells move. So, you know, you're getting a much higher wattage for a much smaller panel, things like that.
I think the big one you've already touched on is weight. There's advancements in weight of everything. I know Cedar Summit are bringing out some cookware, I believe, that is, well, they always have had lightweight cookware. it's always been geared towards hikers.
Yeah.
But now there's a move towards having that familiar, that's similar lightweight kind of compact technology for camping and four-wheel drive as well. So we're seeing
a
lot of
about.
Yep, even rooftop tents. Yeah. You know, we've added heaps and heaps of features to rooftop tents, and they got to a point where we went, these are really heavy.
Yeah.
So now manufacturers are starting to think, well, how can we put all that in the same package but make it a little bit lighter?
Yeah.
And even saving, you know, 10, 20 kilos off of a 100 kilo rooftop tent, that's still a chunk of weight off of your car.
Yeah, I've recently even seen some like carbon fiber shelled rooftop tents and things, which is awesome because weight saving and things like that. The other thing I've seen, obviously, the advancements of is sort of what you're saying in terms of weight saving, but also like the compactness and the packability of things. And, you know, I think about things like the Helinox chairs, for example. I know there are a range of different brands and companies that do something similar, but even the fact that you can have quite a large chair that supports 150 kilos and a 6 foot person and it pack up to something that is like the size of a 2 liter Coke bottle.
Yep.
That's sort of crazy, you know, and things like, you know, utensils and pots and pop-up stuff and
all your sleeping bags, sleeping mats, all of those things are all that it's probably to put an overlying sort of title on this to answer Darren's questions. I'd say it's probably a move to take some of that lightweight hiking mentality and applying that to a lot of camping equipment.
Because I don't know about you, but I remember not long after my first lad was born, he's about 16 now, we upgraded our camping setup. It was sort of like the first time that we fully invested in a camping setup for us as a family, moving away from my family's gear and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we, at the time, thought we'd bought this schmick as camping mat. It was like an Oz Trail four-wheel drive mat in a queen size. It had like the velour top and
massive.
Massive.
Comfortable.
the size of this bloody table rolled up, like half the thickness or whatever,
and
but huge
really hard to,
and heavy. And then
up.
You need like, a million people to roll it up because it's not bonded and it's full of this foam and there's no two-way valves in it. But at the time, that was really amazing.
Yep.
Whereas now I have an XPED double self-inflating mat and like way more comfortable.
You could almost hike with it.
Like it's, I mean, I wouldn't hike with it obviously, but we don't really use it that much because obviously we've got the van and stuff now, but great for when people sleep over and, you know, I'm telling you things you don't know or I meant that you already know. But anyway, it's like 16 years comparing that XPED mega mat with what was at the time the bee's knees of camp mats.
It's chalk and cheese.
Chalk and cheese.
Yep. So I reckon advancements is into the lighter weight products.
Lightweight packability.
Next is, I'll just read the next one. I can't remember if it's up to you or me. Braddles on Facebook is asked about the perfect pop-up tent for comfy waterproof 1 to 3 nighters for a couple with a queen airbed. Since the Malibu Mega 4P was taken off the market, we do a lot of boat-based island camping and it was perfect. Now, that Malibu Mega 4P was one of those ones where you take
it. I call them pancake tents.
Yeah, big round tent. You take it out and it just kind of pops into place. I remember doing a video on it a while ago and they were quite the rage, but they just kind of stopped
disappeared. They've sort of fizzled out a bit. We don't really – I think we've got an Oz Trail one, like a 2P Oz Trail left in our range, but we don't really do pop-up tents anymore. I think that they were initially a really great option and something that was sort of new and fancy because if anybody has I'm sure everybody who's camped has had an experience with or at least witnessed an experience that a camper has with one of those ensuite or shower tents where they're like rolling around on the ground, swearing, trying to like bend it and put it back into its bag and twist it on itself and whatever and beach shelters. So it's that same sort of thing. But I think that the sort of longer term practicality of those sorts of tents, as well as when or if the internal frames and things snap or break in them, you can't really fix them. I think that they were great for some people, but just generally the application across camping probably wasn't as applicable as other options.
Yep.
So I think they have sort of just fizzled out a little bit. I do know that there are some other brands like Austrail, as I mentioned, and it Coleman do a really good looking one as mm-hmm. well. We don't sell them though, but there are some 4P pop-up versions still out there that you can get.
I would say if you're looking for an alternative, look at a four-person dome tent because it's going to take a little bit longer to set up, but it's going to be more stable and compact for your boat.
Yeah.
Or if you still want simplicity,
like the Tough Dome, I think would probably. Do you think Tough Dome 4 would fit?
Yeah, it's a different kind of pack size. It's not flat and round. It's chunkier, but a little bit longer to set up. Or the classic domes from Black Wolf are quite good too. Or a little bit bulkier, but probably air tent technology is maybe taken over from that pop-up thing and you get a sturdier tent. So like the Pronto.
Pronto
I don't know how that compares with pack size. It's a different shape once again, but easy to set up. And people kind of go, oh, I remember when I did, what was it? I did an air gazebo, the Quest air gazebo, and people saying 80 to 100 pumps. That's like, it seems like a lot of work. I mean, you're puffing a little bit, but you've literally set the whole thing up in 2 or 3 minutes.
Correct.
So you've got a couple of minutes of exercise, or if you want, break it up into like 4 30-second shifts.
Mm. Yeah, correct.
And it's pretty easy to set up, and you're going to get a sturdier tent than the Malamu. The Malamu's a great set up and for mild conditions. If it was hot and humid, the ventilation wasn't so good. And in windy conditions, they just kicked around a lot. So
yeah, I think there definitely are other options. But, you know, if you've used the Malamu 4P pop-up tent and you love it and that's something that you want to keep, that's sort of the style of tent that you just want to keep committed to, then I would definitely look at the Austrail or the Coleman 4P options, which you will find available still somewhere, but not with Snowies. So
we'll just check 4P dome tents or air tents.
Yeah.
Small air tents.
Correct. So Ryan on Facebook, he has said, my question is, what is the one bit of kit that you don't have for whatever reason, whether that be space, cost, or practicality, that you wished you did have?
So I've got one that comes to mind straight away, and I don't even know why I need it or if I'd actually use it that much, but I've always just wanted one of those, like just a fixed blade knife.
You just want a knife.
I mean, there's so many times I could have bought it, but I've looked at it and I thought, am I just buying this because I just want to have the knife and then use it like once every now and then to chop up my steak or something like that? Or I don't know, it's got a flint in the handle that I can, I'm not sure. And I've probably not bought it because I've looked at it and gone, I feel like I'm just buying that. I don't know, maybe it just make me feel like I'm a little bit tougher or something. I'm not sure. but then I read, I think it was Kate Grarock's recent, She wrote a blog for us recently.
Oh, like in the five weirdest things she takes in a hiking pack or something?
I think that was it. And she said she takes one and it reignited my want for one. I thought, well, maybe there is justification for one of these fixed blade, like hunting style knives. And I don't not even want to carry it around in my belt just to look like Crocodile Dundee or anything like that. I just, I don't know if I would use it much. Anyway.
I admittedly, there's not a huge, there's nothing that really comes to mind because if I want something, I'll just get it. but I think thinking about the question, what I would have if I could is I would have down sleeping bags for all of the kids because of how small and compact they pack up. So even if it was something like the Cedar Summer altitude or amplitude bags or whatever, so they're nice and big and bulky and they're good for car camping, but they pack really small. Mm-hmm. Because one thing that I don't like about our setup is we have really great sort of canvas sleeping bags, like flannel lined canvas sleeping bags. They're warm, they're excellent, but one, they're synthetic, so they're not necessarily as applicable year round, because when we do camp year round, summer and winter, you know, we might be -3 overnight in some places or more. And then in summer, like 15 degrees at night. And it's like kids still might want to have a blanket or a sleeping bag, but it's just hot. And then it has to be opened up and then they're heavy and they pack bulky and blah, blah, blah. And I just think it'd be really great to have something like down sleeping bags, which one, natural fiber. So the temperature range for usage of those is a lot greater. And they just pack small.
Yeah.
But also, like, who's got 2.5 grand to drop on sleeping bags for your kids?
Yeah, it goes back to our first, Darren's question about evolutions in the industry. So sleeping gear, you can get more compact, but with these compact camping gear often comes at a high price.
Yeah.
So I've got one other, and that's a little pack of hot cross buns. Yeah. Now, for those who are going, what are you talking about? The hardcore do a pack of little lights called the U-lights, and they're USB charged lights. They're basically the headlamp without the band. And I've got
you don't have any?
No, I don't.
Oh.
Well, I've got a hardcore light bar kit and I love it. Don't get me wrong, I love it. But in my compact car camping space that is my head, this is about a quarter of the size.
Mm.
Doesn't give as much light, I would say, than it's a 2-bar kit that I've got. And when they're cranked up, they give a hell of a lot of light. They're really good. But to set it up, I've got to hang the bars up and then string it all up and then plug it in, right? These little lights, I think on my 4-month trip, I could have saved. It's like comes in quite a case, right? The light bars. This is a little thing that would tuck in like in the back of the seat almost. And I can just put them anywhere and came around anywhere. And it eliminates the need for the lantern that I have as well.
Yeah.
So, I wish, and I could buy one, but then I've got an obsolete lantern and an obsolete light kit.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So maybe I should sell them. I don't know. Anyway.
I think also just sort of adding to this is, you know, what's the one bit of kit that you don't have for whatever reason that you wish you did, being the question. It's a little bit left of field an answer to this, and I don't know if you do it, but I'm sure that there are people listening to this that do it. But I often will daydream about if I didn't have kids or I wasn't in a family or if I was on my own or if I just had a partner or all these different sorts of setups and ways that I would structure my life or my camping kit or what I would do in different, you know, planes of existence that aren't my exact situation now or, you know, just – yeah, just because obviously I love gear and I get around it and there's lots of stuff that I would love, but it's just not practical for me and I just don't, I'm never going to buy it because it's not even something remotely close to what's useful for me now. Mm. So I wouldn't necessarily consider that it's the one bit of kit that I don't have that I wish I did because I don't really wish that I did have it. But if my circumstance was different, I would have this and I would have this. Like it's not a piece of kit, right? But I froth so hard. And I really don't want to cop any heat from this from anybody who's listening, but I froth so hard over the new Suzukis. They're the cutest little four-wheel drive things ever. Those Jimneys, freaking love them. I want one of those so bad and I would have the most beast mode little Jimmy rolling around the streets, rolling around the bush, rolling around the country. I would deck that bad boy out. Like no tomorrow.
You've got a tow bar on the Sprinter, haven't you?
Just me and my dog.
So you could just get have a the trailer best life. And tow your Jimny around. You can sit in the Jimny. Your partner can drive with the kids in the front. Everyone's happy, right?
Yeah, but and even like I don't know if anybody out there follows Sidetrack on Instagram or whatever, like or YouTube even, a couple of fellas who do four-wheel driving. But they recently did a competition where they had a Toyzuki, which was like a Toyota Land Cruiser / Suzuki hybrid. And I was like, can't even breathe.
I think your answer there is wishing how much of the gear you've got that you didn't have so that you could downsize. I do look at the back of my car and think, if I was traveling by myself, there'd be a fridge, a sleeping bag, maybe a tarp. And a light, maybe.
I mean, if I had the money,
a lot of space in the back.
If I had the money, I would literally just buy myself Jimny and set it all up so I could just be like, catch later, I'm going away for the weekend by myself.
Yep.
And I would just have that.
Yeah.
And even if it only happened a couple of times a year, it would still just be like, oh man, that would be so good. Anyway, got a bit heated there.
I don't know if we answered your question, Ryan, but a bit of a conversation starter anyway. Matt G on Facebook, who's your next guest on the show? Hopefully that's going to be the Brendel crew.
Yeah, we've got a couple of cool interviews that we're planning And hopefully I personally would really like to do a lot more of them this year. So yeah, I don't necessarily want to say specifically anything other than the Brendale guys, who we're going to be recording with really soon for another episode.
Other things aren't locked in. So other things aren't lots
completely locked in.
Stay tuned.
But yes, we're hoping to get a lot more interviews done this year and some really cool ones as well.
All right, next one. We said we'd try and get through this one quicker, didn't we? But Muzzy, who's another regular, I think, as of reasonably recently, I've seen a few photos of his campsite setups around the place.
Yeah.
I have a question.
I've noticed that Muzzy actually seems to be your classic camper who just keeps buying gear even though they don't need it, because I'm pretty sure I've seen him have multiple different types of tents.
Oh, really?
That all sort of fit in roughly the same category.
Keep posting your gear shots, Muzzy.
We love a good gear shot of
other people's setup.
Yeah.
What's the best way to secure gazebos in high winds? Now, this question, right? My immediate thought is to take the gazebo down.
Yeah, in high winds. Sort of made a note. depends on the type, but take it down.
Because they're not designed. I mean, it's the same with any tent. People go, does this perform in high winds? So if a tent is a large box, it's not going to perform in high winds. Mm. It's, like, we've got to apply some common sense here because it catches wind, right? The gazebo is basically a giant umbrella.
Yeah.
With four legs.
Correct.
So if you get wind up underneath that, that's a hell of a lot of force, probably far more than the seams on the canopy are going to be able to handle.
Yeah.
And that gazebo is going to go wherever the wind wants to take it if that wind is strong enough. So
yeah,
probably take it down. Same as your umbrella, right? If you hold your umbrella into the wind, you think about how much force that's got when it's pulling away from you. That's why the umbrella inverts. Your gazebo is doing the same thing. And if you're getting any sort of updraft, the gazebo is going to take off. So take it down. Or get an air gazebo, which just flattens and then pops back up again.
Yeah, so I was going to say a couple of things depending on the kind of gazebo that you've got. But if you do camp in windy areas a lot, like coastal regions, for example, just invest in an air gazebo because, like Ben said, they're going to have a lot more resistance to that wind, being able to be flexible and bend and things like that. And worst case scenario, the wind is going to flatten them and they're just going to pop back up, exactly like what you said. The second thing is that if you are camping in with a framed gazebo, like, for example, an Oz Trail gazebo or something like that, and taking it down isn't an option, because I know that sometimes, especially with some of the setups I've seen online recently where people are like setting up Tent City and things like that, you just can't take them down, because what you've got under there is your whole kitchen setup, your dining. Like, it's not always plausible to take it down. I would say the best opportunity you've got in those situations is investing in some really decent heavy duty pegs. And I don't think I saw that we didn't actually sell them anymore, and I don't know why, but angle super peg do an angle iron peg, which is essentially like a piece of right angle steel with like a hook welded into it, and it's sharpened to a point. And those bad boys just do not move. So I would be investing in like two of those pegs per corner, potentially even.
Depending on what you're using it. If it's sand, then the bigger sand pegs is even better.
Well, we use angle iron pegs in sand for our beach shelter.
Still good.
Bomb proof, doesn't move. Like 40K afternoon, you know, onshore winds, doesn't move. And so that's why I'm obsessed with those pegs. But like you mentioned before about the fly, that's gone. So tie your guy rope to the frame on the underside of the fly. I would also have a guy rope on your actual fly as well. So keep your fly. Have 2 to 3 guy ropes per corner.
Guy rope,
if
that
possible.
That
chuck your tray springs in. Get heavy duty tray springs, like proper marquee design tray springs. And if you've got hex pegs, screw hex pegs in through the feet.
Yep. Secure at every point, plus add all those guy ropes as much as you can. The common, do we still sell the common gazebo? I can't remember.
Yeah, we do.
I think that's actually got eyelets in the canopy to allow you to tie a guy rope through the canopy and around the actual frame.
I know that, for example, we mentioned Mill Marin in our last episode because someone asked if we were going to go back to Australian Camp Oven Festival. When we were there 2 years ago, that massive storm came through and realistically, I don't know how much wind there was because it was mostly overnight, but there was just so much rain and it was pretty insane. And we didn't have any guy ropes out on our gazebos. They were all just screwed down by Dave, who's our store manager in Brendale, by his hex pegs.
Yep.
And they just didn't move.
Yeah. So and didn't he let me know when I said, you haven't guided these guy ropes out.
He did
haven't
let you know.
These gazebos out, Dave. And by the end of the, into the festival, he's a little bit of like,
yeah. I mean, like, as if you wouldn't though. Like, I would do that to you.
Whatever, Dave.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah. So, just do your absolute best, and I think just be prepared that it might fail or it might shift. And I certainly wouldn't be leaving your campsite unattended if you're expecting heaps and heaps of wind. If you're just leaving your gazebo up, but that's what I would do.
You can drop it too. If all else fails, just drop
really
the height.
Point.
Still keep it pegged up, but drop the height down.
Drop the height, tension your guy ropes.
Till the weather passes.
Luck.
Okay, next one. I think I read the last two. So
Sam on Facebook. I think I've posted this one before, but what are the most weird and wonderful camping hacks / homemade gadgets / solutions or mad camp scientist things you've seen or heard that were either genius or totally ridiculous?
We can just refer to the weird and wonderful camping gear. We've done a couple of those episodes, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, realistically,
not fairy
there's
lights.
Nothing that stands out to me as being in terms of what other people have done in terms of their own hacks and whatever. There's nothing that really stands out to me as being super crazy because I don't like you would only see it if you happen to be at the same campground as somebody or, you know, it's somebody that you know who's done it or whatever. And a lot of people do have cool little hacks and things like that, but they just get about it with their own kit and they just camp and it's not necessarily anything that people would necessarily
there's lots
know
of little-
about or necessarily think about. I mean, you see sometimes people have got something done, you're like, oh, that's a really good idea, but it's not.
It's got lots of cool little ideas that are suitable for an individual's setup, I suppose.
Yeah. Nothing crazy. I mean, there are like groups on Facebook and things like camping hacks or camping tips and tricks and whatever. And even still, you know, there's nothing super mind blowing or anything in there.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but what I would be really interested in doing is posting this in the group to see what other people do. Because I know I can think of a number of people straight away who'll come forward with ideas for their style of camping.
Like I know, you know, when I was growing up and we used to go on huge, big family campouts in the middle of Whoop Whoop, a couple of my uncles and cousins and stuff used to use like rod holders, fishing rod holders, as beer holders next to their chairs and things like that. They just put their stubby in it and it would be off the ground and within easy reach and it wouldn't have to be a table. And then, and you know, I've seen recently people pre-making pancake mix and loading them up in those clear plastic icing bags. Yep. And then just sort of freezing them and then chucking them in their camp kits
like,
and then all
the vacuum-packed meals.
Yeah, like
before you
all
go.
You need to do is just trim the end off and squeeze out your pancake mix and then chuck it in your bin that you've taken with you or whatever. I mean, there's just lots of little things like that that often come up where you're like, no, that's a good idea. But yeah, camping hack Facebook groups or even things like Pinterest and places like that online, you can see lots of handy ideas.
We're not really answering your question, Sam, but I reckon if we think of stuff, we'll put it up there, see if we can get a conversation happening in the Facebook group maybe. But there's tons of little hacks.
I mean, your mousetrap is probably the coolest homemade gadget I've ever seen.
It's on the behind us here in the garage somewhere.
That was from Ben's lap of half lap episode, which is I think season one maybe or two. I don't know. Where he talks more about that if you want to check it out.
But I reckon Outdoor Connection collapsible stools are a good hack because they're a chair, a footrest, a table, bedside table, multiple use items. Anyway, moving on. Joni on Facebook, what do you do if your husband hates camping and doesn't ever want to go ever again? You have a great tent set up, comfy bed, solar lithium batteries, still a huge no, not interested. Just go by yourself.
Get a new husband.
Easy as that, eh?
Get a new husband, right. Joni. Just get a new one.
Well, join.
No, seriously, that's, look,
I guess
that was a bit of a piss take, but seriously, don't. Like, I don't mean that for real. But
I guess it comes with if you've got family. Like, if you're happy to go by yourself, then there's heaps of solo camping groups and stuff you could join in and go along with, and or like just go camping in places where
solo
there's
women's
other
groups
people.
And women camp setups. Yeah. If and even there's you know, like often quite a lot of women's and children's camp groups where you just go all as mums and kids and. But, you know, I know it's hard. Like, if you really love something, obviously you want to share that with your partner. And if your partner doesn't want to do that same thing with you, that can be hard.
Yeah.
Now, like, I wanted to bloody go to the Australian Open the other night and Jessie was like, I hate tennis. And so I was like, oh. I didn't want to go, even though I wanted to go. I didn't want to go by myself. I wanted to go and do that with my partner. And that's totally fine. I mean, that's just something you've got to work out for yourself. But I think that I have
we don't offer relationship advice here, by the
sorry.
Way.
This is me. I have a really good friend who for years and years and years and years we have been trying to get her to come camping with us and has just flat out refused, hates camping, doesn't want to do it. It's horrible. We're like, we will do everything for you. We will set everything. You just need to pack a bag of clothes and arrive and nothing else you have to worry about. Nah, refused, refused, refused. Well, guess what? She works here now and she loves camping.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Terry.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay.
Last 12 months.
You're going for lunch with Terry, aren't you? Sure.
I am. But anyway, so the point I'm trying to make is just because he feels that way now, it doesn't mean he won't feel that way forever. And I would just maybe try and
go to
look, Joni's husband, if you're listening, just bloody go camping, okay? Yeah. It's just
and you know what? Go to a
happy wife, happy life.
Go to a caravan park. Go to a good caravan park and camp there, because the facilities at a lot of caravan parks are amazing. Use the kitchens there. They're clean. If you go to a good one, they're clean. They're awesome facilities. There are places you can go to escape heat, rain, or whatever. There's often cafes at the caravan park, right? Start with something like that where you can get away from the camping side of it and still have
luxuries
in a nice shaded, grassy campground. But look for those things first.
And maybe just sort of find out exactly what it is, like what's the objection.
Right.
I mean, if it's because he can't play Call of Duty with his mates on the PlayStation, then maybe just get him a handheld PS.
Yeah, you can
just
get
a little portable handheld PS and you can get a fix
or
of that.
A projector and a portable screen, if that's what you have to do. You can get them reasonably affordable. So,
anyway, good luck, Joni.
This is something for our other channel, Relationship Advice with Lauren and Ben.
Can you imagine? All right. No, thank you.
I can't remember who's read each one, so I'm just going to keep
going. Okay, I'll just go Dan on Facebook. Is there a National Parks annual pass that covers all states and territories Australia-wide, or do we need to purchase an annual pass for each one separately?
State by state, I think, isn't it?
State by state. There's not a federal parks pass. Even though they're called national parks, they're managed, each state manages them by the state government. And so if you were to buy an annual pass, then all the states would just be fighting over who gets what amount of money from that. And because it's all in-house managed by state, it depends what's available for each state. So I know in South Australia you can get a 2-month pass or you can get a 12-month pass, but then there's other parks like in the arid lands and stuff, you need a separate pass. And so, you know, I'm not across all the different parks passes, but if you're doing something like touring around Australia, for example, you're doing a full lap, you don't necessarily need to buy an annual pass for every single state. It's just a matter of maybe, you know, South Australia, for example, I mentioned 2 months. That might be perfect if you're traveling through South Australia. It might cover you for whatever you need. And just sort of do it that way.
Do some research in each one, because quite often, I know we went to and it's not a pass, but in Kangaroo Island, we went somewhere and then we went somewhere else and realized, oh, now we should have just bought the double pass at the last place because we got entry to this one, but we've paid twice now.
Like you can get a KI pass and you can get passes. I mean, I know for sure in South Australia, for example, if you regularly frequent one particular park, sorry, you can get an annual pass for that specific park, or you can get an annual state pass, or you can, you know, so there's a couple of different options. But
I would say list all the ones you're going to. If it's a big trip, list everything you're going to. Maybe just contact the national parks in that state and say, this is what we're planning. What's our best option?
Yeah.
And is there any kind of reciprocal rights to anything that, yeah. But anyway, answer is no, there isn't a single one.
Would be great if there was, though.
It would be good.
Yeah.
So Robert K on Facebook, two questions. Firstly, pros and cons of camp toilet options and similarly shower options. Thanks for the videos.
I've also added Robert J here also on Facebook because he's sort of asked a similar question in terms of camp toilets where he's said camping portaloo or shovel. We did do an episode specifically on toileting. Mm-hmm. When you're camping, I can't remember which episode that was.
But I think in that episode, I'm pretty sure we covered that there is a move towards having to carry your own toilet more so than just digging holes everywhere, which I like, but because of the volume of people who are camping now, decomposition can't happen as fast as we deposit.
Yeah, just be mindful of where you're going because some of them have pack everything out, like completely off-grid, completely self-contained, I think is the word that they use. Self-contained means you need to take your own portable toilet.
Everything you carry in your body, in your car, has to be carried out again.
Yeah. I mean, if we're just sort of asking, you know, portaloo or shovel or camp toilet options, shovel and toilet paper any day of the week.
If you're going to a spot where that's allowed that.
Yes, assuming
And you're following etiquette.
Correct.
And using that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, a portaloo.
Because realistically, your pack size and weight of a shovel and your toilet paper
is nothing.
Nothing.
And you've probably already got a shovel anyway.
Yeah.
Portaloo makes easier to set up your camp toilet, I suppose, but it's a fair chunky item to put in your car. So you need to think about that. So I wouldn't say there's a best option there. Once again, as with all of these questions, it depends.
Depends on your situation. But, you know, you can get like buckets that you have a bag in and then you put this stuff in and it solidifies like inside a disposable nappy. And there's a lot of different options. So check out that that episode.
Shower options.
If wherever possible, I would say toilet paper and shovel.
Yep.
For me personally.
The difference is compact pack size, not as convenient.
Yeah.
Toilet paper and shovel. An actual portaloo is convenient, but you got to pack it.
Yeah. And then you have things like chemicals and then you have dumping and stuff. In terms of shower options, I don't know. Did we actually do a shower? I don't think we've done a shower episode.
See, I've always worked on shower being on the premise that I'm going to be in caravan parks and things along the way and I'll use the facilities when I'm there. Or I'm going to go for a swim or something like that, or I can just use a bucket and some water if I'm
home
really
wash.
Remote.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I mean, we, you know, we're a family of six, you know, between two and six of us. We just use those little 12 volt companion do one. It's a little 12 volt shower. It's got a pump on the end of a hose, which then connects to a button, which then connects to a shower hose. Yep. It bundles up super, super small. And has done everything we need. And then we just have a pop-up bucket and just put the hot water in there. I think it just depends on how many people are wanting to shower, how much water you've got and how much water you're willing to carry. And also the age of your campers, because even though we've always done that, even with little toddlers, you know, we would take like a collapsible trug like you get from Big W and that would have all our gear in it and stuff. But when you got there, it would just sit and be a little portable bath and you could have the same bath water with maybe topping it up for a bit of heat and it would fit, you know, a three-year-old even in a baby through to three-year-old. So, which is always fun. And there's different ways of doing it. We've never been super fancy with that. But then some families, they just want like a gas hot water
shower system
because that's what's really important to them. So something like the Companion Aqua Heat is a really popular option. But then in that case, you have to, you know, they're rechargeable for your pilot light and your little temperature control display thing, and you also have to carry gas, and then it's just this whole other big heavy unit. But again, it just depends on what style of camping you do and what works best for you, and whether or not carrying gas is a factor, whether or not having an extra, you know, like
it's a pros and cons is a hard way to put it, but it's really simplicity and compact, or simplicity and how easy it is to pack. versus luxury, but you're going to have a bit of extra dollars and room to pack it all up and time to set it all up too, because if you're going to go down that path, if you want that sort of shower, then you probably also want a shower tent.
Yeah.
That's another tent, another shelter to set up and more space and more to carry and more to maintain. And so I would say for me, the con of going full luxury with your shower is the setup time and all the mucking around and extra stuff you've got to carry. The pro is you have a nice shower. I'm happy with the pom wash, as you said, out of a bucket. That means I pretty much don't carry anything more than I've already got, because I've probably already got a bucket I can use and a rag I can use. I just need some wilderness wash or something.
Yep.
And I can have a wash wherever I am.
Yeah. I mean, for us, you know, even as a family of six, we've got teenagers now, with our van set up, we're mostly going bush or remote or somewhere where there's not other people around and we're off grid. So we don't have to worry about like caravan park settings or anything like that. But, as I said, we just have a bucket of hot water, that little 12 volt pump, and we have a foam, you know, like those foam EVA foam squares with the holes in it. We just have one of those.
Yep.
And on the opposite side of the van to where we're set up, everybody knows, hey, it's shower time now. Suction cap hook on the window that you put your towel on, chuck the mat down, shower yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't bother with a shower tent. Don't bother because there's nobody around. You're in the middle of the bush. Everyone knows they're not going to walk around there whilst you're in the middle of the shower. It's just whatever. It's so simple and it fits within, everything fits within a 10 litre bucket.
Yep. So not really an answer for you, but if you want luxury, you can get luxury. Just pay for it and carry it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think you've got a lunch date.
I do have a lunch date.
And you're late.
That is session two for our Q&As that we did a shout out for a couple of weeks ago in the Facebook
session three, which is long already, but we'll probably have more questions. So we may even be a session three and then a session four.
Yeah.
Which is all right, because we don't have to think too hard about what to talk about. Otherwise, we can just keep answering your questions.
Yeah. And I actually really like the Q&A questions. Like it's sometimes it's things that make me think a bit differently than if I was just planning a normal episode for us to talk about. And we also know we're talking about the stuff that you want to hear as well, which is always awesome.
I'm going to go and buy myself a bush knife.
enjoy that. Crop right. Dundee.
Thanks for watching.
Thanks for watching, guys. We'll catch you next fortnight.
Follow us. And sorry, I butted over you then.
You did.
What a mess up that was. We can't do it again. We've done the whole episode.
It's fine.
I'll let you sign out again.
Catch you later, everyone.
See ya.